The first topic that I want to discuss is, you remember that the Mitzrim had pressed Paro very hard to send out Bnei Yisrael, and yet they regretted their decision.
I'm going to be present for half a day.
All right, as long as you stay, and then you always feel comfortable when you have to go. So the Pasuk says in Perek Yudalid of Sefer Shmos, Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'am, Vayehofech levav paro v'yavodov el ha'am, Vayomru mazos asinu kishlachnu es Yisrael me'avdein.
How could we do it?
How could we do it? So they had an original thought and now they regretted it. And the question is, why did they regret it? Now the truth is, and Rashi must be bothered by something, because Rashi is going to stretch his arm out to something that seems so out of context, out of the parasha, out of the pasuk, in order to explain why the Mitzrim regretted their decision. The pashas in the pasuk says, "Mazos asinu ki shilachtu es Yisrael." What's the last word? May of Deinu, apparently they were giving us some good, free, cheap labor. And now we're left without all these avodim. That would seem to be a simple pshat. But when you read Rashi, and Rashi, you know, is always committed to answer questions in pshat, yet Rashi gives you a different impression. On the word vayehofech, Rashi says, may mashahoya, there was a change of heart from his original decision, sharei omar lahem. After all, he, Paro, and of course with the support of his Avodim, had declared, Kumu tzu umitoch ami, you know, get out of here, basically. V'nefach levav avodov. And why? Shari l'shavar, are you omrim ad masa yelonu zelonu limokish? In the past, that not long ago, they had said to Paro, get these people out of here. You know, it's ruining the whole country. It's completely turning our lives, you know, upside down, topsy-turvy. V'achshav, nefchu lirdof achreim, and Rashi has three important words, bishvil mamonam shesh'ilum.
They woke up.
Yeah, they took all the vessels, you know, the silver and the gold, and now the silver and the gold is gone. We have to chase after Bnei Yisrael and get back our possessions. So you know that whenever we learn Rashi, we always have to ask the following. What is the question that we always have to ask when we learn Rashi on Chumash? What bothered Rashi? You know, there's some question here. The simple pshat in the pasuk would indicate, as we said before, that they had sent out the avodim. We wanted our avodim back. But Rashi says no. What was irking them? It was the klei kesem and the klei zav that, if you remember, Hishilum, they took out. And they wanted their mammon back.
But after 3 days, no?
So who raises this question on Rashi? The Sifsei Chachamim, okay. It quotes the Marshal, and he says, Minayin yoda Rashi, shenefchu lirdof achreim b'shvil mamonam shishilum. There must be something that was pressing Rashi to draw the conclusion that the reason why they changed their mind, they decided to chase and get back to Israel, is because of the mammon. So I wasn't able to type out the entire answer. I'll just read you the answer, because I ran out of time here. And he says, V.H. Lomar, this he quotes in the name of the Marashal, you know, at least one of the early Achronim. If the pasuk had only emphasized that Paro had a change of heart, hatam kach, then we would understand very well that the reason why Paro had a change in heart is because he didn't want to send out his avodim. Originally, yalki me'olam lo ratz ol shloch, so he never really had a full-fledged commitment and decision to send out Bnei Yisrael the avodim yartzo, but he wanted them for the avoda. What happened? He was pressured by his officers, who said, "Ad masayil lanu zelamokesh." They get rid of these people. We're falling apart. The whole country is falling apart. And shilach shaleach es anoshim, and they pressed Paro and compelled him to send the anoshim.
I read them in.
Right, so this was the pressure back and forth between Paro and the and his officers. Paro never, never, ever wanted to send Bnei Yisrael out. He wanted them as avodim. But he was pressured to do so by the various officers in his close entourage. The Akshav, and now, Amru Mazos Asinu. Now they said, what do we do? We made a mistake by pressuring you, Paro, to send out Bnei Yisrael. So that Rashi now, says the Marshal, is bothered by the following question. How is it possible to say that the Avadim originally wanted to get rid of Bnei Yisrael? They pressured Paro to send them, to send out the slaves. In other words, they were willing to give up, we would say in Hebrew, mevater, you know, they were willing to be mevater on the slavery of Bnei Yisrael, not to save the nation. And now, all of a sudden, they changed their mind. So what could that be? That's what bothered Rashi. Elavadai bishvil mamono. There must be some other reason here why, you know, the Havamina and the Maskana contradict each other. The Havamina was, let's get rid of these Havadim. That was what the, that was one of the inner circles of Paro were pressuring Paro. Get rid of these Havadim. We don't want these Havadim. They represent a danger, a threat to the very fabric of our civilization. So why now did they change their mind? There must have been something that happened just recently, which is in the previous Psukim, that that Bnei Yisrael were able to take out the Kli Kesef Kli Zav. That's why the Avdei Paro had a change of mind. So again, according to this pshat in the Marshal, what was the question that bothered Rashi? The answer is that it didn't appear to Rashi that all of a sudden they wanted to get the Avadim back, because, you know, the Bnei Yisrael as Avadim, because that was the original decision. It wasn't worth it for them to keep Bnei Yisrael as slaves. So why the change of heart? Why the regret of that decision? And the answer is because what happened in between, right at the end of the period of slavery, before Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they took, the Jews took from the Mitzrayim the Klei Zav, and that's where they had a change of heart.
But the thing is, when they asked him for the Klei Zav, they hadn't decided to leave yet. So maybe they were giving them on the thought that maybe they'll get it back.
Yeah, but now they realize that they weren't getting it back. So that's how the Marshal learns Rashi. Because again, we're trying to figure out what pressed Rashi, what compelled Rashi to add another element here in the equation that doesn't appear in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Kishilachnu asa'es Yisrael me'avdenu. Mazel says, what do we do? So Rashi was bothered. Well, that was the original shikul, you know, back and forth. They deliberated, should we keep them as avodim, should we not? And they came to the conclusion, which Paro was never happy with, he was never really on board, that it's better that we get rid of these avodim than hold on to them. So Rashi was bothered. There must be some other factor that played a role. Then he says, V'od, he gives another answer. This is all the Sifsei Chachamim. Dichsiv el ha'am. If you take a look at the pasuk, there's one word in the pasuk that really seems out of place, and maybe that's what was bothering Rashi. The pasuk says, "Vayehafech levav paro ve'avodov el ha'am." It doesn't make sense. El ha'am, you know, towards the people. What do you mean towards the people? It should have said bavur or beglal b'shvil ha'am or something along that line. Ela mashma bishvil ha'am shesh ilu mamonam. There was something that the Am, that the people of Israel did, that was bothering them. Right? So that's when you read the pasuk El Ha'am, it means because of something that the Am had done, the people of Israel. What had they done? So that's Rashi's answer. They had taken out the Klei Zav and the Klei Kesef.
And the Begadim.
And the Begadim. And now, I think we can add a third element here to the equation. What was bothering Rashi? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that he doesn't understand. The word Vayehafech, in this context, seems completely out of place, antithetical. What do you mean, Vayehafech, Levav, Paro, V'Avodav, and they changed their mind? kosher. He says, "Mashma shenischartu al dover asher asuhu." He says that the word vayehafech, which means charata, regret, always indicates that there was a decision that was made mi raton, you know, it's willingly, I wasn't compelled, and now I change my mind. And why do I have a change of heart? Because I see that I was compelled, it wasn't my decision. He says, Hadvaran Tmuin, this is probably what bothered Rashi here. Vechiler Tzonam Asu, if you made a decision based on your Ratzon, and it's if you made a full-fledged commitment to something because you felt it was the right thing to do, or it was pragmatically worth it for you, you made a significant decision, this is what should be done. Then you could have a change of heart, you could regret and say, well, I didn't consider all the repercussions. But here, they had never made a decision that they wanted to send Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. That wasn't their will, that wasn't their true desire. But why did they do so? Halo huku b'makos gedolos, ad kimat safu. Safu means they were destroyed, v'tamu, they ceased to exist. They were on the brink of distinction, of complete extinction, complete extinction of being destroyed. And therefore, the Pnei Yisrael was sent out against their will. I don't understand. If so, how can you say that they regretted? They never had a will to begin with. They never really wanted to send Pnei Yisrael out. They were just compelled and forced to do so because they were on the edge, the brink of destruction. Of a deep abyss, a bottomless pit, as we would say, and that's why they sent out Bnei Yisrael. So he doesn't understand the word vayehafek in this context. And perhaps that's Rashi's answer here. Rashi says that it couldn't have been that the vayehafek is referring to kishilachnu es Yisrael me'avdenu, that they had a change, a regret of heart, that they freed the people from slavery. No, you have to read this pasuk in two different parts. You have to read it like this: Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim, ki barach ha'am, vayhafech levav paro vavadav. Okay, you have to put a comma over here. In other words, at this point, you want to join us?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
It's a parasha class, right?
This is a parasha class, right? So we're now studying the first part of this parasha class.
So it should be like a comma.
There should be a comma here. You should really read this pasuk in two parts. The first part is vayhafech. They really had a change regarding a certain decision that they had made willingly. And then vayomru, this is already a second paragraph, a second point. Mazos asinu kishilachnu es Yisrael. Me'avdenu. In other words, now we're left without avodin. So Rashi was bothered. What was the ve'yahafech in the ratio of the pasuk? What was Roman numeral number one, as we would say? And after all, they had made a decision which was not their ratzon to send them out and free them as slaves. They really wanted to keep them as slaves, but they couldn't help it. The whole civilization was on the brink of destruction. No, but there was one decision, says Rashi, that they made out of the goodness of their heart. It was a full-fledged decision on their part. And that was
to give them,
right, the expensive possessions, the clay zav and the clay kesef. That was a decision. They sort of won favor and grace in the eyes of the Mitzrayim, and the Mitzrayim decided, you know what, let's give them the clay kesef or clay zav. And on that decision, which again, this would obviate the problem of the Archaim, I think, which was the problem of Rashi, that, wait a minute, they never really wanted to send Bnei Yisrael out. No, but they did make a decision, Mirtzonam, because of the Nesiyas Chaim Beinayim, of giving and bestowing and showering upon Bnei Yisrael all the clay kesef clay so. Now they had second thoughts about that. Okay, Rabbi, so that's Roman numeral number one. Why did the Mitzrayim regret their decision to send Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? And Rashi comes up with a very original, shall we say, theory, which didn't appear in the pasuk, and we tried to figure out what was bothering Rashi.
This is 3 days. This is after the 3 days. They're not coming back.
They're not coming back anymore. They're gone. The Kli Kesef, the Kli Zahav. It's a one-way.
It's also gone.
It's a one-way ticket, we would say. Correct? So again, there are three ways of learning Rashi's Kasha. Let's just quickly summarize them and go on to the next topic. Question number one, which the Marshal raises, and that is that it was the Avde Paro who were pressuring Bnei Yisrael were pressuring Paro to let Bnei Yisrael go and free them as slaves. They were the ones who pressured Paro. Why would they regret that decision? I mean, the same sakana, the same, shall we say, threat that could destroy the entire population, the entire civilization of Mitzrayim was still in existence. There must have been something else that caused them to regret their decision. The second question that Rashi asked was the word El Ha'am. What does El Ha'am mean? And the third question was, what does Ve'ihafech mean? It doesn't seem like there was ever a decision Miratzon to begin with, and therefore the word Ve'ihafech is out of place. Okay, Rabosa. So if you came in now, you know, we're starting a new topic. That's Roman numeral number two. So if you count down, it's the fifth source on your page, and this is the pasuk that says, Uparo Hikriv. Paro came close, right? They were in hot pursuit, as we'd say. Vayisu bnei Yisrael seinei ve'hine Mitzrayim nosei achreihem. The people of Israel look behind them, and it's quite fearful. They see the Mitzrayim are, in, as we said before, they're pursuing them. Vayiru mi'od, they're very scared. Vayitzaku bnei Yisrael. Notice for a moment here that the word bnei Yisrael, the phrase bnei Yisrael, is a repeat performance. Already at the beginning of the pasuk, it says Vayisu Bnei Yisrael. It could have said Vayitzaku, leave out Bnei Yisrael. The Ramban is going to make a big deal about this. But in any event, it says Vayitzaku Bnei Yisrael El Hashem. So what did they say? Now, Rabosai, when you read this pasuk Yud, again, if I could play a game with you, don't look at pasuk Yud Al. Because if you do, then my game is over. It's not going to be. I want to just play a pedagogical, use a pedagogical tool here. When you see the phrase "Vayizaku bnei Yisrael el Hashem," the people of Israel cried out to God. What would you say in a word? What are we talking about? What do you say?
They said, "Oh, Yibay, what's happening?"
Remember, what is that conceptually?
Tefila,
correct? It's tefila. But then take a look at the next pasuk, and it doesn't sound like tefila. Because the next pasuk says, "Vayomru el Moshe hamibliyin kvarim b'Mitzrayim." There are no burial spot plots left in Mitzrayim. It's like, Har Menuchot. You know, you can't even get a plot anymore. Lakachtonu lamus b'Midbar. That you took us out to the wilderness to bury us here in the wilderness. Mazal sasisa lanu lahotzionu b'Mitzrayim. This pasuk Yud Aleph, again, if you had to conceptualize it in one word, how would you describe it? What's the, shall we say, the Ruach HaDvarim?
Is this complaint.
It's a complaint, exactly. It's a tlunah, as we would say. The tlunah is Bnei Yisrael. And it's very hard to reconcile pasuk Yud with pasuk Yud Aleph. And we'll see the Ramban. Now, I want to give you a little bit of a background to the Ramban. The Ramban throughout Sefer Bereishis, and this repeats itself throughout Sefer Bamidbar, he is the defense attorney for Bnei Yisrael. And when we read through Sefer Bamidbar especially, and we see time after time the people of Israel are complaining bitterly and rising up against Moshe and Aaron, it is always the Ramban that you have to look at to get a different perspective on the Pshat. Again, in certain circles, in certain schools of thought, I admit, you know, that they would interpret the Pesukim differently than the Ramban. They would say, oh, the people of Israel reached the lowest level. Look at their bitter complaints. Where was their appreciation? Where was their faith, etc.? But the Ramban is consistently going to prove that Bnei Yisrael and the Midbar were on a very, very high level. I mean, there was an element of the Erev Rav, there were those who worshipped the Egel, but they by far were in the minority. The largest preponderant majority of Bnei Yisrael through the 40 years in the Midbar.
From day one.
Yeah, they were on a level of what, Rabbo? So again, I'm looking for that one conceptual word. What level did Bnei Yisrael and the Midbar reach? Nevuah.
But from
Chazal say that even a shivcha, even the maidservant, had a nevuah which was greater than that of Yechezkel ben Buzi. And the Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnayos, the Rambam writes that in terms of the episode of Parshas Chukas, when they came to complain about the water, the Rambam writes, this was a nation which reached the highest level. And then he goes on to explain, Chas v'Shalom, that they weren't guilty of any sin. It was Moshe who got angry, so forth. So I'm not going to go into that now. Mirzachem, remind Parshas Chukas, we'll go into the Rambam. But the Ramban here, and this is really the first occasion of a tluna, of a complaint that Bnei Yisrael raised. I mean, there was one hint of it back in Mitzrayim when Moshe and Aaron came to Paro for the first time. Yeah. And then they came out and they were greeted by, according to Chazal, two Jews, Dosim Aviram, to say, look what happened. You came to save us? Come on, who are you joking? I mean, our situation is a heck of a lot worse than it was before you came. But barring that tluna, if you will, this occasion right here in Berak Yudalin of Sefer Shmos and Parshas Peshach is really the first of a whole series of tlunot that we're going to see. But here, in a sense, the Ramban has his ammunition in his back pocket. You know, he has his machsanit already in his pocket. And why is that? Because of Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud, straightforward, reads that Bnei Yisrael were involved in prayer to Hashem. So how do we reconcile the prayer of Bnei Yisrael, and add to that the fact that Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, after seeing all the Nisim and Niflaos, and they're about to witness the greatest of all the Nisim, Kriyas Yamsuf, they were on such a high level. How could it be that in Pasuk Yud Aleph they would stoop to this level and deny the entire process of redemption, of Geula, of Yeshua, and say it's not worth a dime? I'd rather be buried in Mitzrayim. So the Ramban says the following, and I underline one particular line at the introduction here. He says, Einenu nira, it does not appear, in other words, it doesn't make sense, ki bnei adam atzoakim al Hashem lahoshiyam, that these very same people who are crying out to Hashem for salvation, yivatu bi Yeshua, they'll kick this concept of salvation with their feet. Asher asal him all the great miracles and the Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus from each that Hashem brought upon them. They would kick that all and say, Yomru ki tov lahem shelo yitzilam. It would have been better, it would have been more advantageous had Hashem not saved them. It doesn't make sense to me, says the Ramban, to read Pasuk Yud Aleph and come to the conclusion that these people, on the one hand, are praying to Hashem, they appreciate God's Yeshua, and at the same time, they'd rather give it up, and they'd rather go back to Mitzrayim. He says, Haval Anochon. Now, if we're going to go through this Ramban, again, I always would like you to, you know, to make a little notes here, but the words Haval Anochon introduce the first of three different answers to this question. So the Ramban is going to offer three different approaches, all of which assume that Bnei Yisrael were on a level. They should, you know, we should not shun them and say what a shame that they said Hamiblik Varim B'Mitzrayim. Number one, Shenefarish will interpret ki hayu kitos. Does anybody know what the word kitos means?
Yes.
Yes, go on, out loud.
Classes.
Classes or groups.
Groups.
Right. For example, Chazal say that at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, there were groups of people in Israel. And the Rabbi, although he doesn't quote explicitly that measure, I have no doubt in my mind that that's what he has in his subconscious mind, if not his conscious mind. Vakosuv Yisaper Kol Masha Asu Kulam. The Pasuk in one section is going to record the responses of all these various different groups. Omar, and the Pasuk tells us, Ki hakat ha'achas, and one particular group, so ekes el Hashem. And perhaps I could add, again, this is Berzon's own addition to the Ramban, that group represents the preponderant majority of klalis. But v'ha'achas, there was another group, makcheshes b'nevio, they contradict and deny and I think contradict maybe is a better word, nevio, God's prophet. So again, the statements in Chazal now indicate or reflect the different groups, and it's all together in one pasuk. One group was crying out to Hashem in prayer, the other group was denying Moshe Rabbeinu, the prophet of Hashem. And that second group, Eino Moda B'Yeshua, is not willing to embrace the salvation that's being done for them, Anasis Lahem V'Yomru, and they would rather declare, Ki Tov Lahem Shelo Hitzilu. Now the Ramban, in his first interpretation that we're studying now, divides up the people of Israel into two major groups, and the Pasuk is recording the response of these respective groups. One group, as we said, was crying to Hashem with tefillah. The other group was denying Moshe, and they were not willing to accept the salvation of Hashem. But here, at this point, the Ramban makes a brilliant move. I love this. You remember back in Pasuk Yud, there was a certain phrase that repeated itself. We noticed it. Yeah, exactly, George. B'nai Yisrael, right? At the beginning of Pasuk Yud, it says, Vayisu b'nai Yisrael aseinehim. And then, at the end of the Pasuk, once again, Vayitzaku b'nai Yisrael. So the Ramban raises the following question. Why is it that the Torah emphasizes the phrase b'nai Yisrael by repeating it a second time? Then the Ramban sharpens his question, and he fasts forward, if there's such a phrase, from Pasuk Yud to Pasuk Lamed Aleph. And this is the Pasuk that describes, at the end of our parasha, the Kriyas Yamsuf itself. And there it says, Vayiru... Okay, I'm going to read it incorrectly now, so don't quote me on this. Vayiru b'nei Yisrael es Hashem vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. Is that what it says? It doesn't say. It says, Vayiru ha'am es Hashem, Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe avdo. And there, and then, at that moment, the Am came to believe in Moshe, in Hashem, and in Moshe. So the Ramban wants to know, what's the difference? Why does the Torah sometimes use the phrase, B'nai Yisrael, and sometimes, instead, it uses the word Am, the nation itself? And the Ramban offers a fascinating interpretation. He says that when you talk about a nation, you can talk about a nation in one of two ways. You can talk about every individual in and of himself who makes up that nation. He's part of the people. And you can talk about the people as a group, as one entity. Without going into the individuals, if you talk about the group as an entity, you blur the distinction between the greats and the leaders in the people and the others, the rank and file citizens. Says the Ramban that the phrase B'nai Yisrael is a positive phrase. The phrase Ha'am is less than positive. When we're describing the people of Israel as B'nai Yisrael, we're talking about every single individual child or descendant of Yaakov Avinu that makes up and is part of Klali. So we're talking about the positive elements or dimensions and contributions of every single unique member of Klali Yisrael. This reminds me of the Ramban about Bnei Yisrael at the beginning of Parshas Shmos, where the Ramban says that whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to count Bnei Yisrael, he counts them like he counts the stars. And the Ramban says the mashal to the stars is just like each star is unique, has its own personality, its own color, its own light reflection, etc., etc. So too every member of Klal Yisrael is unique. That's called B'nai Yisrael. The word Am, on the other hand, says the Ramban, is referring to the people as a whole. And that includes even individuals who you can't really single out for their own, shall we say, achievements and their own hasagas and their, you know, whatever they accomplished in the madriga that they achieved. Says the Ramban, Pasuk Yud here in Perek Yud Daled, Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael, this is a reference to those yechidim, to those special individuals. You see, I bolded it, ki shem, ki b'nei Yisrael shem la yechidim. You saw that, Ramban?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The word Am, on the other hand, he says, is shem lahamon. That's a word that indicates the masses, where you blur the distinction between one person and the other. You know, Chazal say about Klal Yisrael that partzufeyam einam shavos v'ein deyoseyam shavos. Every member of Klal Yisrael is unique, has his own features, his own physiognomy, his own tzuras haponim, and his own personality, his own character. He brings to the table his unique contribution. That's called Bnei Yisrael. It's a shame why Yechidim.
You're saying it's not necessarily only a few individuals. It could be a majority, but they're all individuals.
Right, correct. Now, where does the Ramban take this from? So I saw in the Sefer Sam Derech, he tells you to look at a Mishnah in Masechta Tainis. I'm sorry, I didn't get to put the Mishnah on your page, but I'll read the Mishnah to you. The Mishnah says, we're talking in Tainis about the lack of what? Of rains, right. Rains are not coming down. So they got to the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, and the rain is still not coming down. They've been praying for rain for a while, and the rains are not coming down. It's a drought. So the Mishnah says, Higiu liyud zayin b'marchesh v'asar b'marchesh v'lo yarduk sham hischilu hayichidim mis'anim gimel tainios. Notice the word yichidim, the same word that the Rabban uses to define Bnei Yisrael in our pasuk. And the Gemara says the following: Man yichidim, who are these yichidim that start fasting already? How do you say fasting?
Yeah,
I'll get used to it. Amar Avhuna Rabbana. These are the rabbis. It's so interesting that the Mishnah used the word Yechidim to refer to the Talmidei Chachamim. The Talmidei Chachamim are those who have some unique character. Each Talmid Chacham is different than another. And every Talmid Chacham is called a Yachid because every scholar has his own way of looking at things, his own personality, his own character, his own Veltanshah, his own way of interpreting. That's what a Talmud Chacham is. Talmud Chacham is never bata. You know, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Chul, and I'm teaching it now, that a birya, a full being, is never bata. It always retains its identity. A Talmud Chacham is a birya. When you can take a Talmud Chacham and mix him up with others, but he'll always remain separate and unique. That's because the Talmud Chacham is a yachid. And that's what I think Rashi has in mind here. There were two groups and two radically, fundamentally different responses to the situation of Bnei Yisrael looking behind them and seeing the mitzvah in hot pursuit. One group was Bnei Yisrael. The Ramban identifies them as the Yechidim of Bnei Yisrael. These were those who came out with a response of crying and pouring out their hearts to Hashem. Tefillah was the proper response. You know, the Ramban Shita is that Tefillah is Midrabbanan. Against the Rambam. Okay, that's not for now. That's a whole shiur to itself. But even the Ramban agrees that in one situation, tefillah is d'oraisa. What's that called?
Eitzara.
Correct. An Eitzara. And this is a case of an Eitzara. And therefore, the proper response, the halakhic response, the appropriate response is tefillah. And that's what it says, Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael. However, the other pasuk, that's pasuk yud aleph, that's referring to the Am. Later on, even the Am accepts Moshe Rabbeinu where they had denied him and contradicted him before, and that's where it says, Vayiru Ha'am Es Hashem, Vayaminu Bashem of Moshe. And this is the first approach to the Ramban. The second approach to the Ramban is in the next paragraph. It's a little bit small because I try to fit a lot on the page. V'itachin, there's another possibility here, he says. Sha'amru lo kein b'tseisam. Okay, now in order to appreciate this Ramban, we have to read Pasuk Yud Beis. Right, we have on the page Yud Aleph, Yud and Yud Aleph, correct? So let's take a look. I'm going to read to you Pasuk Yud Beis, which is the very next Pasuk. And it says the following. Halo ze hadavar asher dibarnu. He says in the English, is this not the statement that we made to you, the Mitzrayim in Egypt, saying, Lemar chadal mimenu v'navda es Mitzrayim. Leave us alone so we can serve the Egyptians. Ki tov lanu avodes Mitzrayim mimuseinu b'midbar. It would be better that we serve Egypt than that we should die in the wilderness. So the Ramban has a gevaldige chiddush here. He wants to say that this Pasuk Yud Aleph that's in front of us should be understood in the light of Pasuk Yud Beis. And it's all one unit. This group of complainers, in inverted commas, the complainers, the Merchot Kfulot, what was their problem? they were complaining back in Mitzrayim. This was not an original complaint. This was just reiterating what they had started in Mitzrayim. Let's read the Ramban inside. He says, V'itachem, and it's very possible, Sha'omru came. When did they say this? When did they give this complaint? Betseisam, at their departure from Eretz Mitzrayim, V'odom be'Eretz Mitzrayim, but they were still in the land of Mitzrayim. What were they afraid of back in Mitzrayim? The answer is, they were afraid of dying in the wilderness. And the Ramban is medayek, and this is an earlier part in the Ramban. The Ramban says, Lo Amru, if you take a look carefully at Pasuk Yud Aleph, it doesn't say, Lekachtenu Lamus. It doesn't say the Milchama, correct. It doesn't say anything about a Milchama. He's not afraid that they will destroy us. Lo Ayu Chafetzim Lates El Hamidbar. What their problem was, it had nothing to do with seeing war, was they didn't want to go out to the wilderness. Pen Yomusu Sham Barav Mitzam, and there they would die in hunger and in thirst. So in other words, what they're mentioning here is what they had in their minds way back when. This was their whole mindset when they left Mitzrayim. Where are we going? From Mitzrayim, we're going into the wilderness, which is a place of Tzoma, which is a place of Rav, where there's no bread to eat, and there's no water to drink. And this is sort of what they're doing now, is they're just reiterating that same fear that they expressed originally back in Mitzrayim, when they were about to leave, and that is the fear that going out to the wilderness would really signify their death. Kasher Hesiv Osam Elokim Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf, because the Pasuk tells us earlier here in the Parsha, the very beginning it says in Pasuk Yud Ches, let's just go back and read it, Vayasev, right? It says Vayasev Elokim Esa'am Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf, correct? And this is what it generated the fear of Klal Yisrael. The decision was made that they face in the direction of the wilderness. Is Kasher Hesim Osam Elokim Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf, says the Ramban, is therefore they were overwhelmed with this fear that they would die in the Midbar. It offers another possibility. George, I'll be with you right in a second. Let me just finish this last line. Oh, Amru lo mitchila. Oh, sha'amru lo mitchila. Ana neitze. From the start, they said, when they're in Egypt, where shall we go? In Derech Eretz Plishtim, if we go towards the Plishtim, Ilachmu Banu. But in Derech Hamidbar, is then Tov Lanu Lavodis Mitzrayim Yuseinu Shom. And that's going to lead us to the third possible pshat in the Ramban. Yeah, George,
it would be better to be a slave in Mitzrayim than to die in the wilderness.
In the Midbar, correct. So again, the Ramban is mitigating their complaint a little bit. This was a complaint because of a fear that they were carrying with them from the time that they knew they were going into the Midbar. The Efshar Od, now the Ramban offers a third possibility, Lomar, Ki hayu ha'am aminim b'Hashem u'mispalim elav la'tzilam. As we saw in Pasuk Yud, they believed in God and they prayed to Him to save them. Aval, but where did they have doubts? B'Moshe. They began doubting Moshe. They knew that Hashem has the possibility, the power to save them, but would Hashem actually save them? I mean, Moshe took them out saying that Hashem was going to save them. Is nichlas safek belibam? They had a certain, shall we say, a shadow of a doubt in their hearts. Pen yotziam limshol aleihem. Maybe this was all some sort of ego trip on the part of Moshe, and he wanted to control them. He wanted to set himself up as the sovereign ruler of this people. V'afal pi, you'll ask me, says the Ramban. This is like a rhetorical question. Sheroha osos va'mofsim. They saw all the great miracles that Hashem brought about through Moshe. Obviously, Hashem was behind this. He was definitely advocating and recommending Moshe Rabbeinu as the Navi. He says to Rabban, Choshvu Sha'asa Osam, maybe it was Moshe who brought about these Osos Umosim B'derech Chachma. I mean, the truth is that there were others who also brought about some pretty strange events, Derech Chachma. Who were those?
The Chartumim,
correct? Osha Hashem hevialeim amakos birshus birishas hagoy. Maybe they had another theory that the reason for all these makos and these mofsim was in order to punish the mitzrim for all that they did, but not in order to save them. Ki ilu chafetz Hashem biyitziyasam. If in truth, as Moshe prophesied, God wanted to take them out of Mitzrayim, lo haya paro difachreim. This doesn't fit into the pattern here. Why would Paro actually run after them? And I think Targum Yonasan ben Uziel also supports at least the first approach in Ramban, because on the pasuk Vayomru, he says v'amaru rishay bnei Yisrael. That element, that kat, that group of bnei Yisrael. But again, I just want to summarize what we see here in this Ramban, that he offers three approaches to try to understand what was going on here. This is all based on the Ramban's premise throughout the Torah, that you can't just assume that the Dor HaMidbar were low people, they were sinners. But rather, Ramban's shita consistently is that they were faced with great challenges. On the one hand, they certainly believed in Hashem as the good God, the compassionate God. But on the other hand, there were so many situations in which they faced tremendous life or death dangers. And they never knew exactly how to put this all together. The challenge to Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar was what I would say is the contradiction. You know, the antithetical Hashgacha Pratis on the one... It's kind of like, you know what Chazal say, it just occurred to me, that the greatest of all the nisyonos that Avraham Avinu faced was the last nisyon of burying Sarah. And offhand, it's a pella. Why would that be the most difficult of the nisyonos? But the answer is that there seems to be a pattern. Avraham Avinu sees a pattern in which Hashem always comes through in the clutch, you know, at the end of the day. But here, when Sarah died, and he had literally no place to bury her, this began to, or naturally could have put doubts in Avram's mind. I mean, the greatness of Avram is that he overcame those challenges. But that, where's Hashem? If he's with me, if he's there to support me, how could he leave it such that I can't find a burial plot for my wife? I mean, you can imagine how depressed he was having losing his wife. And it seems to me that sort of chazal would really be the approach of the Ramban in terms of the Dor HaMidbar. Hashem was very harsh with the Dor HaMidbar, and the punishments were severe. And the failure of Bnei Yisrael was not what we would call a chet. You know, chazal say over and over again, if we attribute chet to the greats of Klal Yisrael, then we're making a mistake. We analyze them, in a sense, on our turf, on our terms. You know, we look at them as smaller people. They were greats. These were Nevi'im. But they faced challenges. Where was the Hashgacha taking them? You know, on the one hand, you know, there was God who took them out of Mitzrayim. On the end, there's no food to eat. And then Hashem gave them the man. You know, there's no water to drink. And then they gave him the bear. After Miriam died again, there was no water to drink. And this kind of pattern repeats itself throughout the 40 years in the Midbar. So how do you reconcile Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael and Hashgacha with the fact that Hashem seems to be forsaking Klal Yisrael, leaving them to the elements and the harsh Midbar?
Isn't that what a Nisayan is? I heard once that a Nisayan is from the language of Nes, of like a banner. And Hashem wants to bring out what's inside of us. Right. He wants to test us that we should do. So that, you know, that's...
Correct, and there were those who succeeded in the Nisayon, and there were those who maybe couldn't reach that level.
They couldn't think.
Maybe they couldn't get to that level. Maybe they were.
Every day they had
They were on a level of shiflus person. But again, on the other hand, Chazal say they saw unbelievable miracles.
It's still, and
they experienced that.
When you're an Eved, you don't think about it.
All right, another few minutes and we'll do Roman numeral number 3. That's the last source on your page. Go ahead. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe matitzak elai. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisom. Now the Ramban is very bothered here. When Hashem says matitzak elai, then the clear implication is that on the part of Moshe there was a tzaaka. The pasuk doesn't say anywhere that Hashem was so, that Moshe, excuse me, was tzaaka, that Moshe cried out to Hashem. So in order to answer this question, the Ramban quotes a mechilta, and this you'll see on the bottom of your page 1, flipping over to page 2. Shohayim Moshe Soek Umispalel, that Moshe in fact was crying out to Hashem in Tefillah. Vuhu Nachon, and that's the way we should go here. Kilo Yada Mayasa. Moshe was in a bind, and he didn't know what to do, because the Mitzvah were about to destroy Klali. So the Afal Pi, but you might ask the following question: Sha'omer lo Hashem, Hashem already promised in Vachabdo b'Faro that through Paro I will bring out my glory. So didn't Moshe therefore have a guarantee that Hashem was there to save them? So what do you mean lo yoda mayase? Hu lo hayodeh ech yisnaik. Again, Moshe Rabbeinu had full confidence in Hashem, but what should be his response to the present dilemma? Ki hu al sfas hayom. On the one hand, if they go forward, they go into the water. On the other hand, behind them, asone rodef umasik. The enemy, the arch enemy of the people of Israel, is after them and about to catch up to them. V'hayim ispalo. So what was the essence or the substance of his prayer? Says the Ramban, Shiorenu Hashem Derech Yivchar, that Hashem should reveal to him the proper response. Give me the insight, Hashem, help me understand with great wisdom what should be my response at this time. Oh. So what's the problem? And why is Hashem saying, again we go back to our Pasuk, and at Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Matitzak Alai. Oh, he says the following, Zeata Matitzak Alai. What was Hashem's gripe against Moshe? Shahayisa tzach lishol, you shouldn't have said, you know, what do I do, right? Ech yisnaig. You know, that's it. He should have said, tzach lishol matasa, v'ein lecha tzorech litzok. Moshe's response was tzaaka. Tzaaka implies that we're in deep trouble. That Hashem, you have to save us, and this is a deep supplication to Hashem. That's not appropriate, Hashem says to Moshe. Correct your praying. That's true. But you should be asking a different question, not prayer and supplication depending upon on Hashem, but rather you should be saying, Matasa, what is the next move? What is the next asiya that I should make? Ki kfar hodiacha, I already told you. V'achamda v'faro. Now the Ramban says, well, you know, this whole mechilta is based on the predicate, on the premise that Moshe was indeed crying out to Hashem. So let's ask a question on the Mechilta. V'lo siper akosiv tza'akas Moshe. So why didn't the Pasuk tell us that Moshe was crying out to Hashem? So Ramban offers a four-word answer. I'm trying to figure out this answer. Ki hu bichlal Yisrael. Because he is part of Israel. What does that mean? He is part of Israel. I looked in the art school. You know, sometimes the art school Ramban adds a little bit of a footnote here, and in this case I didn't see anything. Let me just read to you. Yeah, ki hu bechal Yisrael, he was included in the rest of Israel. Again, what I'll tell you what the Ramban is saying, just literally the Ramban is answering that if you look at Pasuk Yud says in fact Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael, and Moshe is part of b'nei Yisrael. But it's a little bit of a kvetch teretz, is it not? I mean, after all, the Ramban was bothered, Meikar Maika Sover, he was asking the question, why did the Torah tell us that Moshe was crying out? And the answer to the Ramban is, okay, technically the Torah does tell us that Moshe was crying out, because it says, Vayizaku B'nei Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu is part of B'nei Yisrael. So when it says, Vayizaku B'nei Yisrael, it by definition includes Moshe. But I was thinking perhaps the Ramban is telling us something important. There's no question that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah is on a great level, and it's a special thing we find throughout the Torah that when Moshe prayed, Hashem was listening, and Moshe had a tremendous impact through his tefillahs. But nevertheless, in this case, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah sort of is overshadowed, if I could use that term. It's always up front, high profile. But here, in this context, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah, in a sense, is omitted. At least there's no explicit mention of Moshe's tefillah. And the reason for that is that there's a greater tefillah than that of Moshe. You know, it's sort of like if you put a candle up to the sun, you know, the Gemara uses the term Shraga Vatira Maimahani. You know, what good is a candle in the daytime? It doesn't give any light because there's a greater power over here. And Moshe's tefillah, as great as it is, the unbelievable stature and status of Moshe's tefillah here, in this particular context, it loses a little bit of its stature, of its significance, of its Maila Gedola. And why is that? Because who bichlal Yisrael? Because if there's a tefillah which is being prayed by the entire nation of Israel, then even the great tefillah of Moshe is completely overshadowed. Okay, Rabosa, I think we'll stop here. I mean, there's a lot more that I had here, Roman numeral number 4, 5, and 6, but this is what we can accomplish in the time that we have allotted, and maybe Bli Neder will get a chance to finish this on Tuesday again at 11 o'clock. Any questions or comments before? Shalom Aleichem. What is your name?
Lawrence.
Nice.
Nachum.
And where are you from?
I'm from Jerusalem. I live in Achoma. I don't work on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
I checked your website.
It's interesting. Most people in this country work on Sunday. Like, Sunday is like a day like any other day.
Right. And I work for a company that works with foreign markets. Mm. So
they have the day off on Sunday.
Mm. Yes. So I usually work from Monday until Friday noon.
You put in a full week.
Yeah. So we have to do 40 hours in 4 days and a half, actually.
Okay. Wow. So you definitely deserve a little bit of a break on Sunday. And if you're ever around, please join us. And even though you can't come on Tuesday, but Sunday is a separate... you don't have to be here on Tuesday. You have to appreciate Sunday. You know?
Okay, so there is a parasha class few times a week?
I give twice a week. I don't know if there are other parasha classes that I have to check the schedule, okay. But I give on Sundays and Tuesdays at 11 a.m.
On two different parts of the parasha?
Two different parts of the parasha.
Okay.
One is more hashkafic, or the other is more halachic. Or I try to try to integrate different topics.
Okay.
Thank you. Good. Yeah, thank you.